CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. It is Friday. All right, so with me this morning, Lebang Khosana, who's been like sinusy and asthma-y and flu-y and weird all week, but she hasn't let on. I mean, I didn't even know yesterday when you were on the show that there was anything sick going on with you. You're all right?
Look, if you didn't pick it up, then I'm cool. Like, then I know that I'm actually okay. I'm cool.
All right.
I'm just hoping it's not this new gosh darn variant that
is
apparently the CBRY to the power of X, whatever the
It's called. Oh, people are so excited about all the fucking losers in society are so excited about this new variant. They're like, ah, it's a new variant. We're all going to die again. We've just got over this one. Now people have gone, Look, don't even get me started on that. We're also joined by by Stevie Wonder's younger brother, Benny Wonder, who... Ben. Now, Ben is not... if you're watching us on YouTube, let me explain to the people who are listening. If you're watching us on YouTube, you're probably being confronted by a very strange sight this morning. It is Ben in his headphones and a cap and a pair of sunglasses wearing a burqa. Well, not a burqa. It's like a veil over the rest of his head. And Leanne is here as well. Hello, ass. How's it going?
Hi. Sorry, I was logged in on Monday's show.
Well.
Leanne, I was 5 years ahead.
You're
Leanne late as usual for the attention.
You're ahead of your time, ass. All right, so here's Ben. He looks like he's wearing a veil, and he's got his hat on, he's got sunglasses. So Ben went for some eye operation this week. I mean,
It's quite a straightforward thing. It's that PRK. So they basically just laser. It's a non-contact laser to your eye, which basically does things, magical things to your cornea. And then afterwards, you're pretty fucked for a few days. So I'm in that pretty fucked stage right now.
But what was...
What
was wrong with your eyes in the first place that you needed to have this... You said PRK, so People's Republic of Korea. That's North Korea.
Yes.
Yep. Yes.
Oh. Basically, a whole bunch of small Korean men basically go into your eye and they live there forever and they sprout propaganda and 2020 vision.
No, seriously, what was wrong
it's
with your
amazing.
Eyes?
Well, I had to wear glasses, as you know.
No.
And I fucking hated wearing glasses. I was like a minus 1.8 my eyes, because you know, you get like a rating. No.
Yes.
Jeez, that's nothing.
I know. So I hear it's nothing. But I lost the sharpness. The sparkle of life was not there unless I had put glasses on. So
Ben, are you telling me this is normal LASIK surgery? This is the kind of surgery that they do. You mentioned the cornea, but I think you mean the lens.
Yeah. Look, I might get tripped up with terminology. I've heard a lot of things in the last 2 weeks about my eyes, but essentially they got to work on that. Yeah. So LASIK, basically, from what I understand, is they actually remove tissue, and it's a bit more of a hardcore procedure, but the recovery is much easier and less painful. And then the PRK, it's kind of like getting a grass burn in your eye. And so basically, if like that's your eye, they do laser like in a circle.
Oh, right. Okay, so it is the corner.
Why are you making a triangle with your fingers right now?
Shut up, Leanne. And then basically the tissue grows back towards the middle. So I'm back in the growing towards the middle phase.
Oh.
But it's quite hardcore here. Like, I've broken bones. I've torn tendons. I've been shot. I've supported the Proteus for 20 years. I've never experienced the pain that I went through in the last 3 days. It was just so fucking hardcore.
Oh, no.
And I've been on this pain med since Monday, so I haven't had a decent shit all week either. It's been hard, guys.
Oh, my God. Poor you, Ben. All right, so hang on. Let me just get this right. You're wearing this this construction that you've put over your head, because not because you're afraid that we'll see you, but because you can't look at screens. It's too sore.
You can see me, but like that. Okay, so that hurts a bit.
Yeah, because
I'm in an apartment with my blinds down, and it's like being a witness protection, but I haven't done anything dodgy.
So is it sore when you look at anything bright? That's when it really gets sore. Okay. So what is the best thing for you to do is just to lie in bed with your eyes closed?
Yeah, so with your eyes closed, obviously it helps with recovery apparently. And but I just need to talk to someone because it's a bit lonely sitting around. it was quite nice to be on the show.
I've
got nowhere to go today.
I'm glad you made it. So how long do you have to be like this, like a reject of society living in witness protection?
Well, you know how these things go. It's like you always hear the good stories, right? So if you talk to someone who got this like a few years ago, they're like, oh, best thing you've done in your whole life. It hurts a bit, but it's the best thing they ever do. And everyone I spoke to, literally 100% of the people that I spoke to, because I, with all things, I do my research, and everyone said it's incredible. But like, and the doctors obviously undersell it because they've got to cover their asses in case you're the anomaly. It doesn't work on. So when you sign the consent, when you sign the consent form, basically it says like, you know, you could go blind and we're not paying you a cent kind of thing. But the general consensus is that the first 3 days are not great. You're in a lot of pain. And then basically you, every day you wake up, your vision just gets better and better for over a 6 month period to the point that you then get back to hopefully 20/20 vision.
Wow. Yeah, it happens sooner than you'll think. It's a bit frustrating in the beginning. You think, oh my gosh, is my vision going to be blurred like this forever? And it kind of reaches a plateau and then all of a sudden it gets better. But also, so you know, doctors also warn against it because they're all in cahoots and they want us to pay for glasses and contact lenses and consultations. So,
well, I think ophthalmologists want you to do this because they don't sell contact lenses.
But it is,
but yeah, I mean, look, it's one of those.
It's amazing that we can do this now.
It's one of those things that you've got to put faith in.
You know, you in the old days, you would have just had to go slowly blind and lose your sight. And, you know, by the age of 60, Ben, you'd be stumbling and hitting things and walking into furniture and that kind of thing. But now you have a chance of.
You wear glasses.
Yeah. Well, you know, but even then, glasses are quite a new invention. So, you know, back in the day, you'd literally need, if you were rich, you'd have someone walking around with you holding your hand. And if you were poor, you'd be thrown into the fire.
Well, exactly. You'd be absolutely useless to society. You'd be the person. And, you know, like I've been obviously working on my masculine frame all year, and to sit with glasses is a sign of weakness. And I don't want that. I don't want to be weak in any way. So here I am going through this with this fucking thing on my face right now, which obviously is not great. But yeah, well, I put a lot of faith in this, and I'm excited about the progress.
I'm pleased you did it. I mean,
such a pity you can't see that I'm topless right now.
Sure, he's really missing out.
Like all the what effort I went to.
After all the effort, your favorite nipple caps.
So, let's just, while we're unpacking our health problems like old people do. Leanne, you're having a good health week, are you?
Yeah, I am actually. The hip's fantastic. Good.
All right, good.
I haven't had any debilitating pain.
Oh, good.
Oh, I've just clicked it now. That's even better.
Okay. And Lebang, apart from your sniffles and you know, a little bit of throatiness, you're okay?
I think I'm doing all right. As long as I stay away from, like, people, I'll be fine.
And you see, compared to Ben's,
that's the plan.
Compared to Ben's burning eyes, we all feel fine. But I did go for my second vax this week, and I must tell you, my arm is still fucking sore. And yesterday, I didn't have a great day because it felt like this dull sort of headache the whole day. And it can only have been the vaccine because I'm not sick today. I feel fine. But I was worried it was going to be a prolonged thing because I heard some horror stories about people who went for a vaccine and they ended up sicker than they even were with COVID. So I'm glad to say that with that. Look, it's done, and I'm only doing
it. Oh, well done. It's all done now.
Only doing it because I want to travel. So at least it's out of the way now. All right, so lots of things.
Just in time for the new variant and possibly a new vaccine.
I knew you'd be excited about this new variant. I knew you'd be thrilled to have more danger on the horizon, you.
No, I'm actually devastated, I must say.
Well, they say that this one is obviously they're going to say it's much more, you know, communicable and it's much more devastating and dangerous and it's more of a threat to children and all this shit. They're just trying to shut us down again. These governments enjoy having lockdowns. Oh, speaking of which, can I play you a clip of the worst person in the world? And you, Ben, you don't have to look, but listen and tell me who you think this is. Are you ready?
Damon.
No, wait, listen. Here it is.
It's actually really straightforward. If you've got a vaccine pass, you can do everything. Basically, that's it.
Any idea?
What, you can have a threesome with the most beautiful people on Earth?
That's what it sounded like, because she's got a horrible New Zealand accent. Her name is Jacinda Ardern, and she has locked her country down now for a grand total of almost 2 years. Certainly over 600 and something days. And the people of New Zealand have had no contact with the outside world except electronically. And she thinks this is great.
Damn. So they can't do everything that they want with a vaccine passport.
No, they can't.
God, that woman's that. It's like if you took a James Bond movie, took all the budget away from it, and they go, "Okay, guys, we need a villain," and they go, ugh, let's have this middle class woman with a horrible bird accent, and that'll be our villain.
Bird accent. So
it's actually really straightforward. If you've got a vaccine pass, you can do everything. Basically, that's it.
Basically, that's it. Yeah. She's That's great. What? She's just great. Jacinda Ardern. Anyway, what a horrible person.
Those people are going to implode if they have more lockdowns.
Mm. Yeah, we can't.
Nah, I don't think so. I think they'll just become more and more average because you always forget, like, New Zealanders don't have a lot of ambition to start with. The fact that they can just put food in their gullets and sit and watch TV is mostly fine for them.
Oh, wow. I've got to bring up something a little more fun. I have these little swallows that live in my house. It's a pair of little little lesser striped swallows. I took a picture of one yesterday for you. And the two
That's
of them,
pretty.
They've built a little nest outside my house. Well, in my house, but outside of it. And they've now got babies on the way. And they didn't come last year because of COVID. And now this year they're back. So I'm glad that they're back.
Well, obviously, they got their vaccine passports. So they can do anything they want.
You can do anything. It's that simple, didn't you know? So that's really great. That's that simple. And then I just want to talk about Cyril quickly while we're talking about world leaders who are really disappointing us. So here's a picture of Cyril in his office, all right? And this is in the Union Buildings, by the way. Beautiful buildings. Really magnificent, the right place for the president of the country to be. But what the hell is wrong with him that he doesn't have a single book on his shelves? Is that because Jacob Zuma took all the books and burnt them for fuel? Because I don't understand. Like, surely they can just go and buy a bunch of books and make it look like he actually... I mean, those are bookshelves. Now, I know Madiba used that office. I know that de Klerk used that office before Madiba, but Thabo Mbeki definitely had lots of books. I remember pictures, and we'd have video from him when he was in the office. He had lots of books then. He used to read. I mean, he also used to write those dreary as hell, but very, very interesting for people who are doing political analysis, but dreary for the rest of us. Blogs. I mean, Thabo Mbeki was a real blogger. But this guy, this Cyril, he's sitting in his office. And he hasn't got anything on the shelves. There's a little bit of, like, there are two porcelain vases and two plates that look like they've been forgotten.
Fine china.
But I don't even know if it's fine china. And I just feel like, can't the people who run his office just at least try to make it look like he spends more than 5 minutes in there every week? Because really, this is, he's got a tray there with two Valpre waters. He's got a little pathetic South African flag, a pathetic one, literally the kind that any of us could buy at a flea market. I mean, he's the president. He's got a big, ugly TV screen there with nothing on it. And I just think, like, this is his office. Like, dude, make some effort, dude. Like, you're the president of the country. You know, there are people who work in call centers who have better looking offices than this. And you're in a beautiful building. You've got, like, these views and these balconies, and you know it's got history and these magnificent furnishings and things. Just like try to make it more interesting, don't you think?
It's just because he's gone digital. That's all.
Oh, but still,
yeah, we hope, and also you're just giving him the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, and we both know that Cyril has no care or interest for reading, for books, for like he's just how much time does he even spend in that office? If anything, looks like a little bit of a photo shoot gone wrong.
Yeah, he probably, I swear he goes in there less than I go into my guest toilet at my house. I'm telling you, that's he's mostly, he's probably just, you know, and this is just before he had Uhuru Kenyatta come and visit, who's the president of Kenya. Now, you would think also, you're welcoming important foreign guests to your office. You know, when Joe Biden takes people into the Oval Office, it's a big deal. It's a photo opportunity, and it's the Oval Office, which is probably the most famous office in the whole world. And our president's sitting in this room without any furnishings in it, and it looks like it's a warehouse, basically. Nicely appointed, but it's still this empty warehouse. Like, make an effort, dude. Ben, of course, you can't see any
no surprises.
Of that. You have to take our word for it.
Yeah, but I just assume because Cyril, I mean, the only piece of paper he's ever cared about are tenders. So it's not like he's ever collected books anyway.
Oh, that is great. So if you don't know what Ben is doing, like Carl says, what the fuck is Ben doing? Carl, you need to come on at the start of the show, so I'm not going to repeat it. But
yeah, Carl, fuck, no, man, really. Why are you so late? It's honestly Friday. Get it together.
But Jim says, agreed, Gareth, Squirrel is sulking after the ANC's terrible performance in the elections. And I'm misquoting Jim horribly there, but that's the point. Digital with newspapers on the desk, says VB. Were there newspapers? Let me just check that again. I didn't even see
it. Yeah, they were.
I had news.
But also, that was just newspapers. You know, part of the props. You know, the nuts there in the back and the little. These are all just props, people.
Yeah, they're props.
Yeah, but he has newspapers to take the bribes because they put the bribes in the newspapers and hand it to him. That's the reason for that.
Wow. Anyway, there's Cyril. So I thought I'd bring that up because it's one of the things that's been irritating me in the last little while. I just saw those pictures because the presidency, for some reason, I decided to follow them. It was probably not a good idea. I'm to blame.
Yeah, no.
Anyway, so I must quickly ask you about this. I went to a fast food takeout place about 2 weeks ago, and I wrote this down because I didn't want to forget. It's not often I get takeaways anymore. I used to eat when I was much, much fatter. I used to eat that sort of shit for a long time. But the point isn't about me and eating fast food. The point is, as I was going through this drive-in, the woman says to me, "How many hungry children would you like to feed today?" After I've made my order.
Yeah. Now,
I didn't know that I was
there. So in other words, to make a donation.
Yeah, I didn't know I was there to feed hungry children. And it kind of caught me off guard, and I didn't know what to say. So I said, "None." And then she looked at me, like really disapprovingly, you know, like, what a horrible person you are. But I didn't go there to feed other people's children. I didn't make any children that I want other people to feed for me. So why am I being asked to feed other people's children? Do you know what I mean?
You know what the sad thing about that 2 rand thing is, apparently, and this is apparent, if they don't meet a certain quota as the staff for that actual 2 rand, then they have to foot that bill.
Oh,
so
no,
it's
that's
it's a bit dark.
No, that's bullshit. I can't believe that.
Look, I hope it's not true.
No,
I really hope it's not
true.
Because
they might feed one of the children to the other children, but I don't think the staff have to pay.
Good
so Lord. Tell me how that works. Jeez. What are you meant to say? Because that is, if that
no,
is,
I totally get it.
That's emotionally extorting people. That's what that is. You see, it's all about how you ask. If you say, "I want to add 2 rand for hope," which is what they meant to say, then you can always say, "Nah, not today," or "Sure, go for it." But when they actually say to you, how many hungry children would you like to feed today?" That's very specific, you know, and sure. No matter how you answer that, unless you're giving the money, you come off as a complete dick. There's no nice way to do this.
Well, I would like to know, has she gone off script because she's just so tired of saying, "Would you like to add 2 rand for hope?" Has she now just basically freeballed this because she's bored, or is that actually the staff script?
She's getting creative.
Yeah, she's getting creative to the point that she just thought, "Hey, I'm going to throw some words around here." Because I don't think that would be the staff script.
Well, I mean, I don't like it.
It's pretty dark.
It really. I mean, I'm not a big buyer at those outlets, but it makes me not want to go back. Seriously, it's not nice. It feels like emotional extortion, and I don't think it's really. I don't think it's appropriate to ask that kind of question of people. You know, so for me, it's fine. I can get over it, and I can come and moan about it here on the show for 5 minutes, but. Imagine if you are someone who does a minimum wage job and this is the one time in the week that you get to treat yourself and some person decides to say to you, "How many hungry children would you like?" You're like, "I'm the hungry one. That's why I'm here buying this from you. Don't try to make me feel bad."
Gareth, I totally agree. And there's so many times where someone is begging. Firstly, for me, charity's always begun at home. I help the people closest to me when
absolutely.
I can. That's number one. Number two, I've been doing my bit with a debit order since I had a Bob T card when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
That's to an animal cause.
Right.
Thirdly, the average Joe begging for something at my car door, I'm actually in a worse financial position than he is. I owe more money than he does.
Well, yes, but you aren't living in the squalor that he is. So that's how people. But listen,
well, I mean, might as well be, and I could be very easily. But the thing is, I'm not in a position to help. Yeah. Stop.
I don't know. I just found it all kind of uncomfortable. Look, it's not up to me to judge you on whether or not you're a charitable person. And frankly, none of us can compete with how much money someone like Bill Gates or Warren Buffett give to very worthy and unworthy causes all over the world. We're not going to be philanthropists on that scale, no matter how hard we try. I have huge admiration for people who actually spend their time and take the effort and go and do social work. You know, they run these, mm-hmm. there are two charities that I've been very involved in. And one of them is the one that the First Lady is, you know, she's a patron for, which is the Early Care Foundation. They look after young kids in townships, and they also give women in these townships jobs to look after these kids. They train them as, you know, as creche teachers and carers and so on. And the other one is obviously Headway, which you've heard me talk about a million times. But we're not comparing who's a good person here. And I don't think any of that matters when you go up to buy some fucking chicken wrap, you know. Then they say to you, how many hungry children would you like to feed today? It's like we're overburdened. And I know this sounds terrible. I can hear this being quoted out of context and people thinking, you guys are the worst people ever. But the reality is, like, we're overburdened with charity. There's just too many people, especially this time of year, who, I mean, what street corner have you been on lately where there isn't a person with a cardboard sign?
Oh, no. I mean, obviously, like, the Roman Pause of Youth is all over the place. It's just, it's got no hope. But Gareth, I think there's something more pressing about how corporates should go about this. So, you know, they've got all those corporate social responsibility kind of thingies, and it goes within like tax breaks, all that kind of stuff. I think a much more responsible message here, and maybe a better marketing one, would be, okay, so you've just bought all this shit and it cost, I don't know, 137 Rand. Because you shop here, 7 Rand of that has gone to charity. Thank you for your service. And then what you do is you're almost getting incentivized to go eat from them, because now they're actually telling you how much you're donating. And go and place orders and then get the tip jar to come out.
Well, this is what irritates me. Is you're exactly right, Ben, is they're not giving you a discount when they give the money to charity. They're getting all the credit for you adding, you know,
doing the heavy lifting
over, but you're adding over and above. So their bill stays the same. In other words, that's the price, honey. That's what you're paying. And furthermore, would you like us to take some more money from you? But in this case, we'll take the credit too for helping feed hungry children. You know, they want to have their cake and eat it. It's outrageous.
It's a ridiculous tick box exercise. If they were really excited about the fact that they want to help starving children, which I'll get into in a second, I don't think anyone actually cares about it. But then they'll say, like, this year, proceeds of our turnover went to this, and we saved this many kids. That should be like the billboard.
Right.
But you know, just on this, like what happened with Elon Musk saying, look, guys, here's the money. Show me how it gets used. And then suddenly the World Health Organization, they were like, bah, 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 bah.
Exactly.
Because I don't believe, I think world hunger is just like anything else. It's just one big bullshit story that nobody actually wants to fix because they have no idea, but they'll happily raise money in perpetuity for it. And they skim off the top and do whatever it is. If they had to solve world hunger, suddenly you'd have entire organs out of business and people would have no jobs.
That's exactly right. They don't want
to solve this thing. Well, they just want to keep it going.
You make a very good point. So to give people the background, the head or the president of the World Food Program went on Twitter, which is where everybody shows what good people they are these days. Of course, none of them are. And then he said, oh, Elon Musk, you know, if you just gave us 1% of your company's value, we could solve world hunger, or whatever the percentage was. And Elon Musk said, sure, okay, I'll do that. I'll sell a whole bunch of shares, even though that's going to affect company value. Because, you know, when the founder or the CEO of a company sells shares, then everybody panics and they all sell shares and then the whole value of the company dips. But that's besides the point. He said, sure, I will. I'll give you X billion dollars, but then I want to see in a transparent balance sheet on the internet that everyone in the world can see. I want to see how you spend your money, because he knows, and anybody who goes into anything below the surface on any of these NGOs, he knows that almost all of their bills at the World Food Program are for staff salaries. It's not to buy food for people. And he knows that almost all of that money is in order for these people to fly first class all around the world, pretending they're solving problems. And this goes not only for world hunger, this goes for climate change, We know that all these people who talk the big climate change game are actually doing fuck all to save the environment. It goes for inequality people. You know, these people who are going around the world talking about inequality. Those guys are also, you can't solve these problems with more money. These problems are a part of human experience. Some of us get hungry. Some of us have too much food. If you look around, you can usually tell which ones are which by putting them on a scale. Either way, it's not going to be solved immediately, right? And then there are people who will say, like in America at the moment, there are these people like Al Sharpton who go around. They're making a killing out of race hustling, basically going to people and saying and shaking down corporations, saying, "What are your diversity and inclusion targets?" And if they don't have, you know, enough women on the board or enough black people on the board or whatever it might be, then they shake them down. And basically these corporations are then extorted like we are at KFC when we're asked to add R2 for hope. And they
admitted you went to KFC. There it is. It came out.
No. I wasn't going to give them any marketing around this, but I think it's really bad that ordinary people have to foot the bill for all these virtue signalers in the world who aren't actually doing any of the good work. They're basically living off your and my charity. It's ridiculous, man.
So you guys, also, from the
Lebang.
Yeah, I was going to say it's literally exactly what Ben is saying. These people don't really want to fix anything, guys, and they've not been wanting to fix anything for a while. They're happy that, you know, poverty is where it's at and, you know, kids are this hungry.
That's what made them famous.
Exactly. Like, oh, we go to Africa so that we can, like, feed all the little Kenyan babies just so that they can look like they're doing something. They have absolutely no interest in solving anything because it works for them and they're happy to keep it that way. Secondly, not to mention any other brands, but, you know, the Big M is also starting to ask for these R2s, just by the way. So it's getting quite dire.
These are the outlets that basically are making people obese as well. So I love the fact that they're doing all this bad with their actual products.
Right.
But then they want us to, like, help them soothe the savage beast. Just one other thing, and then we've got to move on. When you talk about this stuff, what drives me crazy is that these people who run these things are not actually providing any value. They're taking a huge amount of credit for all of this supposed good that they're doing, but they're not actually doing the hard work themselves. I mean, Prince fucking William the other day has the cheek to say, he goes, "Well, you know, one of the big problems in the world is African overpopulation." I'm like, excuse me? You're now going to tell people. This guy's got three kids, okay? He's just made three kids. He hasn't earned a cent in his life, this man. God bless him. But you don't get to tell hardworking people who are living in the Congo that they can't have two children because it's just overpopulation. But you have three and you're living off the public dime. Are you kidding me? Who do you think you are? And he'll be the one that goes and gives speeches. Shut up. Shut up. There are so many royal highnesses at the moment in Britain. Thank God Prince Charles is thinking of trimming the tree and taking away some of those leeches on the public system. I mean, there's so many of them that are just hanging around doing absolutely nothing, sucking money out of the system for what? And this guy's busy telling us here in Africa we're not allowed to have kids. Shut up. Anyway.
All right. People just aren't honest about problems, and that's the biggest tragedy here.
Yeah. Ben, anything in closing for you before we let you go and rest your eyes and the sun comes up and you have to retire to your dark room like a vampire?
Like a vampire.
Guys, life's really good. I listen to some fascinating podcasts this week. Maybe I'll pick up some more topics next week. Life's pretty good. I just need to get my eyesight come back.
I listened to, on your recommendation, Ben, I listened to an interview that Rogan did with Jewel.
Jesus. Yeah, interesting. That
was
great.
So Jewel's the singer. She was born in Alaska. And she tells this incredible story. I'm not going to spoil it for you. This incredible story about her dad. I mean, you don't have to listen to the whole interview. It's probably, what, in the first 20 or 30 minutes of the interview? About this, about the cat, which you have to listen to. That's the whole highlight of the podcast.
Well, the interesting thing about that podcast is that there's a plot twist throughout the 3-hour mark, which will blow your mind. It's that good of a podcast, though. So you stay in it.
If you can if you can get through that much time. And I mean, I found it interesting.
Listen to it over a few days. It's just amazing. Like all Joe Rogan stuff. Like it's really helped me this week. I've listened to four or five other great podcasts.
Yeah.
Oh, and also if you go into, Spotify, type in Doug Stanhope, because I can't really read screens. So I'm just guessing, and predictive text is helping me a bit. Yeah. Last night I just typed in Doug Stanhope and I pressed the first available play button.
Brilliant. Isn't he awesome?
Fuck. Gareth, I'm listening to it again today. It was just ridiculous. It was this guy. He's a beautiful mind. And for over an hour and a half last night,
he's also a massive drunk and drug addict. But he's my favorite comedian, Doug Stanhope, and I've listened to him for 20 years. By the way, I met him in Texas, like three or four years ago. Amazing! What an amazing guy.
Moment.
All right, thanks, Ben. We'll speak to you later.
All right, guys.
Cheers.
See you later. Ciao.
All right. Very, very good. So now we've moaned and complained for the morning, but we can get on with some positive stuff. So, Lebang.
Yes.
You have asthma?
Yeah,
because I could actually hear it this morning. I could hear you going a little bit. Do you carry one of those?
Yes, I do have asthma.
You carry one of those little pumps?
I've got two pumps.
Oh, yes, sis.
I've got two that I roam with me everywhere I go. And funny thing is, my asthma kicked in when I was like young, like maybe primary school. Mm. And then it kind of went away as I grew older. Literally after I gave birth to like my third kid, it just came back like, boom, I'm back. Jesus. Like I never left. So it's like this weird, I didn't have asthma. Then I just suddenly really, really had asthma. So yeah, I roam with like two little thingies. It's horrible. It sucks.
Yeah, there's some people here commenting on Prince William. So Michael says those beefy guards with big black hats are gone and they've been replaced by military police and no one noticed. Yeah, I think they've I saw something on Sky News the other day that they're kind of rebuilding the military from the ground up to make them more fit for purpose. But I don't know what that means. I mean, half the reason people go to England, half the reason, because it's the biggest tourist draw, is to see those guards marching around Buckingham Palace and see the carriages and the horses and the queen waving at people and the flag flying and all that shit. That's what people go there for. It's a big tourism business. They mustn't change any of that. You know, I like the tradition. What they're going to do is stop these inbred degenerate aristocrats from talking because they shouldn't have so much to say. That's the problem. And as Nico says, I'd probably retire on the money spent on Princess Beatrice's ceremonial hats. God, do you remember that? Do you remember that terrible hat that she wore to one of the weddings? She wore a hat that looked like a toilet seat. Do you remember?
I emceed an event for Pam Golding, the year-end function, around about that time. And I actually made a copy of her hat out of polystyrene and netting. And I put that on, and that's how I started the evening. And everyone knew immediately what it was because it was such a hot topic at the time. But her enormous stupid hat that she wore.
Right. Mandia says, Lebang, kids and pregnancy literally suck the life out of you. And in your case, the air.
Oh. Yeah, no, legit. But it's pretty hectic, especially like during COVID. And obviously, like when you're pregnant, like you're sharing your whole body with this thing.
Mm.
Yes, this thing. Mm. So it's breathing with like the same air and like it's taking all your food and your nutrients. And you constantly have to be like vitamined up.
And you thought giving R2 to feed a hungry child was a lot.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, I do have to also say that your kids are so cute. You put them on Instagram, and I know if people want to follow that, you'll let them, but it's up to you, obviously. Are you on a private account, or are you just open?
I'm not. My account is pretty open. Oh, okay. I've never kind of,
You can
come on over, have a look at my kids, terrorize me.
They're very cute. Your youngest is starting to learn how to climb the stairs, which is hilarious.
Yeah, no, it's quite chaotic. Hilarious, like, on Instagram, but chaotic for me because, like, sometimes I get scared. When she gets to, like, the seventh step, I'm like, is she just going to, like, fall back and I'm going to have to, like, catch her? It's all cute, though, but they're getting there.
Ricey Beck says, Lebang, don't die on the job. Gareth would have to pay compensation. Yeah, that's also true.
Thanks for the advice.
And Robin says, Lebang, this is the hard part. When they're grown up, they will bring you such rewards. Well, yeah. But I mean, I'm sure that there's even though it's hard work now, the reward is there. I mean, you know, there's no parent who doesn't say that the kid, whichever kid, all of their kids, is that's the, you know, the best thing they've ever done. So there we go. Robin's obviously not listening because she just said, "Are you on Instagram?" I just said that, Robin. Pay attention, please. Jesus.
Yebo,
we can't do everything twice. Louder for the people at the back. All right.
At Lebang Khosana. For you,
much.
Robin.
Thank you. Okay, a couple of headlines that we need to pay attention of, pay attention to, rather. Leanne brought this up. There's a new variant. And people are now already talking because, you know, the corporate media and the government, they can't get enough of this lockdown. Even though we've had so much of it now, we're all chatful. And I don't think South Africans are going to put up with much more of this. It's bullshit. These curfews are pointless. I don't see the purpose of them. Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma running around telling us that we must, you know, we must stop smoking, buying cigarettes, buying alcohol, all that stuff. Do you remember? It was only a little while ago, hey? And they still want to push this some more. So amid concern around a new coronavirus variant in South Africa, there's renewed uncertainty about tighter lockdown regulations ahead of the December holidays. First things first, did the lockdown work or help the last time? The data is in. You can do any analysis you like. The answer to that question is no. So why are we doing something that didn't work the first time? Why are we going to do that again? Don't tell me we don't know if it works.
No, I mean, I understood it right in the beginning when everything was unsure. We really didn't know much about the virus.
Yeah.
Hospitals were overflowing. I understand then, but you know, there are ways and measures now, and people are getting things under control. It's just harmful to the economy.
Well, the National Institute for Communicable Diseases on Thursday confirmed 22 cases of this new variant called B1.1.529. They're just fucking with us now.
Yes.
This is just nonsense. I'm
really?
Sorry. This is nonsense. If you're actually going to give it a name like that, you don't care anymore. Like, you know, Delta.
And you also don't know what you're doing. Like, nobody knows what's going on there. They're like, yeah, we're all still figuring it out. You know, this is kind of lab rat phase.
Stop with all this fear and nonsense. Just if we're going to survive this disease, we're going to survive it. If we're not, we're not. This is how viruses and humans have interacted for thousands and thousands of years. Stop being idiots. The mutation has been detected in Botswana and Hong Kong, apparently. Minister Joe Patla, who's the health minister, since our last one was a crook, has said it's too early to predict the line of action regarding COVID-19-related restrictions ahead of the holiday season. Don't even listen to these people. Do not obey them. Do not comply with their stupid rules. Get on with your life. They don't know what they're doing. They have absolutely no idea of how to deal with your health and help you to be healthy. Figure it out yourself. Ignore the government. That's my advice to you, really. It's outrageous that these people want to do this. Now, there's been a lot of this on social media, and I'm sure, Leanne, you and Lebang both have something to say about it, but I see Shell are being lambasted on social media. Shell's Wild Coast Seismic Survey Plan, which has encountered fierce resistance from South Africans. I thought some of this was bullshit, but it turns out it is true. Residents and grassroots environmentalists will ramp up pressure against the government and fossil fuel giant Shell next week to call off the hunt for oil and gas in the Eastern Cape's remote marine environment, known as the Wild Coast. And people are angry, huh? You could see it all on social media, but there are actually people going to Shell and protesting at Shell, their head office and Shell service stations.
Exactly.
What do you guys know about this?
Yeah, a lot of people. I haven't allowed myself to get too deeply into it at the moment. I just feel like there's so much going on already. Do I really want to wrap my head around another crisis?
Yeah.
But I am picking up how serious it is, especially on, you know, TikTok. As you know, I'm a fan.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are boycotting Shell garages.
All right. Well,
this is literally the first time I'm hearing of this. I'm actually quite surprised that it's gotten this bad. Like, everyone's just actually like really upset, guys. If you look around, people are pissed.
Yeah, but let me just
a lot of things.
Let me remind all the Gen Z activists or slacktivists who are going to boycott Shell. None of you have cars anyway, so boycotting Shell doesn't mean going standing outside with a sign. It means not buying their petrol, which you can't afford anyway. So I don't know how you're helping. What it needs is for everyone who actually can afford petrol and diesel to go and use other places other than Shell service stations. But otherwise, you're just a slacktivist. Anyway, there's other news too. Do you want to know? Here, I'll give you an option. You can either find out about Amazon workers who are going on strike, or I'll tell you about the $900,000 that's been raised for a man who served 43 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit. Or I can tell you.
You know the true crime thing is what I'm going to go for.
That's always the best one. Or there's a British man.
Way more interesting.
There's a British man who was given a 3D printed eye. Now I wish we had Ben here for this one because he could have gone for this too. Which one are you most interested in?
Or he could have just printed some off quickly in the study, you know, instead of all this trouble.
So listen to this.
Let's hear about the guy.
The dude who was, okay, so thousands of people are raising money online for a Missouri man who served 43 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit. Kevin Strickland, who's 62, was exonerated on Tuesday after serving decades at Western Missouri Correctional Center. He was convicted in 1979. Guys,
what?
Yeah, 1979.
Damn.
One count of capital murder, two counts of second-degree murder, and a triple homicide. He received a 50-year life sentence, and he's done 43 of those years without the possibility of parole. Senior Judge James Welsh dismissed all criminal counts against him. His release makes his confinement the longest wrongful imprisonment in Missouri history and one of the longest in the world. The Midwest Innocence Project created a GoFundMe account to help him restart his life. This is terrible. Apparently, as of Thursday,
it's worse than being hit by a bus and your life ended in one fell swoop.
Yeah, because you've literally had 43 years to decay in prison. I mean, we talk about Madiba with his 27 years, bad enough, right? This guy did almost double that. Crazy.
And I think the most frustrating thing that a human can go through is when you're not believed, when everyone thinks you're a liar. That's a lot to deal with.
I hate these wrongful arrests and these wrongful convictions. I hate them. I can't even watch movies about them. So this drives me crazy.
Well, this will be a movie.
Oh, definitely. So apparently what they did is they exonerated him through DNA testing. And apparently,
that's what happens with a lot of these cases.
Yeah, apparently he's now got a million in this GoFundMe account. But, you know, even having $1 million to restart your life after you've lost 43 years, you can never get time back. And if you ask any really, really rich person, like I'm talking billionaires, you know, the people who just have money to burn, and you say to them, would you rather have time or money? They won't even hesitate to tell you time. So this poor man.
Yeah.
He learned of his release through a breaking news report that interrupted the soap opera he was watching on Tuesday in prison. First thing he did was visit his mother's grave. To know my mother was underneath that dirt and I hadn't got a chance to visit her in the last years, I revisited those tears that I did when they told me I was guilty of a crime I didn't commit. This is just heartbreaking.
Yeah,
that's heavy.
His first night out of prison was a restless one where thoughts of returning to prison, among others, kept him awake. He said, I'm used to living in a close, confined cell where I know exactly what's going on. And being home, and you hear the creaks of the home settling and the electrical wiring and whatever else, I was kind of afraid. I thought someone was coming to get me. I mean, he was a teenager when he went into jail, huh? Just unbelievable.
Can you imagine, like, mentally what he has to deal with now?
Oh, my God.
Trying to get back into society and trying to operate. I can't imagine the anxiety that comes with. That's just so unfair.
Yeah. I mean, there's a guy I follow. He was in prison for 19 years for a robbery. And he's just come out. He's in his 40s. And he just... you know, documents his day-to-day life and for anyone who's interested in how things work at prison. But what's interesting is all of the little habits that he had that he's battling to shake.
Oh, yeah.
He's living with his girlfriend and he's still doing things like hanging the washcloth in a certain way because then it wouldn't be – because they used to share washcloths. He would – he does all these strange bathroom rituals, and he can't shake a lot of them, you know, and that's just 19 years when it's been your whole life. Man, there's nothing that can, that can redeem that.
Oh, it's awful. It's awful, awful. Because that's not like, a you know, something unfortunate happens to someone. Like they fall off a ladder and they end up paralyzed. And we're going to speak to a guy called Marco who listens to the show a bit later on and hear his story, which is just absolutely incredible. But that's an accident. This is human beings purposely doing this to you. And it's a mistake in the judicial system, obviously. It's a mistake in conviction. And it happens, I mean, even once is too many times, right? Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Let me tell you quickly, this week on Beyond Madness, which is one of our new podcast series, this is just the greatest series. If you haven't listened to it before, if you're someone who's interested in psychiatry, you have to listen to Professor Christopher Paul Szabo and his guests. They discuss the role of genes in influencing the emergence of different mental disorders. How much of a relationship is there? And this is really the kind of high-level conversation you're not going to get from just me and Lebang and Leanne. You know, this guy is, he's a professor of psychiatry. He talks to other professors of psychiatry and other experts who, these are people who've studied this stuff their whole lives. So you're going to come into the conversation and you're going to feel probably a bit stupid for the first couple of minutes, but my God, by the end of it, you're going to be absolutely thrilled that you did. So if you're interested, I mean, who wouldn't be, in the link between genes and mental disorders? And can you inherit various mental disorders from your parents? Can you pass them on to your children? How does that work? We will find out about all of that. For example, is schizophrenia caused by a single gene? This is the sort of thing that they're going to discuss. And you do not want to miss this. It's called Beyond Madness, Genetics and Psychiatric Illnesses. You can find out more by looking up Beyond Madness, available wherever you listen to podcasts. So you don't have to go to cliffcentral.com. Look it up on Apple Podcasts. Look it up on Google. Look it up on Spotify. And you will find Beyond Madness with Professor Christopher Paul Szabo. It's really good and really interesting. Take a listen to that. So that's happening this week. So among the, all the things that you have to do, and if you've got a busy weekend on the way, this is the stuff that you do to fill the gaps in between. While you're busy doing some exercise, while you're busy sorting out your cupboards, while you're busy putting up Christmas decorations, whatever it might be, you can listen to these podcasts. I know it's coming, huh? It's coming at you.
Yeah. Oh, it's here. It's already here. Yeah. I actually need to listen. I need to find out if I'm bipolar or not, like on a serious note.
Really?
Yeah, I just need to just check if I'm okay.
No, I think you're okay. I mean, like the you would probably be serious bipolar people. They sometimes have to be institutionalized, and everybody's self-diagnoses. Go and get a proper. If you really are concerned, go and get a proper diagnosis. You
need I definitely will. It's obviously just like the, as you said, is it passed down? Blah blah blah. And I know like, you know. Family, granny, blah, blah, blah. There's definitely a history of it. Mm. So does it skip a generation or does it like everybody? These are just things I need to know. So I should be listening to Beyond Madness so I can find out.
Speaking of madness, Carl says, you're right. Genes play a major role. When I wear really tight jeans, it constricts the blood flow around my balls and affects my mental state. Lunatic.
Yo, Carl will never hold back on one like a comment like and that
he's,
ever.
He's never gonna be serious, which I like, you know? I don't wanna especially on a Friday, I don't wanna be too serious. Speaking of which,
Black Friday
today, yeah. Stay away from the shops. I know that's the opposite of the message everyone else is giving you. But unless you're crazy. I mean if you wanna go crazy, go to the shops.
Well, tell look, I think we
tell us,
we experienced Black Friday madness like no other during the looting.
Yeah,
if you want that vibe
of
people going crazy for goods at stores, I think we've already had our full.
We've already done our Black Friday. We did it in July.
I think stick to Cyber Monday if you want to stay safe out there.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm not going to the shops at all today. I did a little bit of grocery shopping yesterday, and there's nothing that will get me to go to the shops today. But I suppose there's some people who might have forgotten, and they're waking up this morning, and they're going, oh, damn, I was going to do my weekend shopping today. Well, good luck. You might have to just find some old biscuits and, you know, moldy cheese in the fridge and have that for supper tonight, just so you don't have to go to the shops.
I won't lie, guys. I'm going.
You're going? You're going to do it?
I'm going. I need, like, apparently there's R100 for a pack of Pampers somewhere out there. There's, like, tissues are going for $80 somewhere out there. I am going, and I'm willing to fill up my vehicle with all of these goodies just so I can come back and be like, literally, I'm going.
It's hectic. Yeah. Linda saying Black Friday will be a breeze after the riot week. What I don't get, so the part of this that I don't get is like all those people, they're probably already awake and standing outside the shops now waiting for the doors to open. And to save what?
Yeah.
You know, 20 Rand. So I understand that some people are, you know, slightly pinched for cash at the moment. That makes a lot of sense. Everybody is going into the holiday season. It's been a really difficult year. Most people's salaries have not kept up with inflation. In fact, most people have been earning less than they ever earned because companies have had to cut salaries just to survive the last 2 years. But if your time isn't worth more than that 20 Rand you're saving, then you're doing a bad calculation in your head. Because to me, again, we equate
unless
time
you can find, and unless you can find a really good deal. I mean, there's some deals. I've never partaken in Black Friday.
Yeah.
And ironically, even if I wanted to this year, I don't have the money to.
Right.
But there are really good deals where you can buy a year's worth of supply of something. And that for the convenience alone is just amazing. There are other things like if you've been, you know, a bed is not something that you wake up and think, I need a new bed today.
Mm.
It's something that kind of festers over months. And it's something that those big ticket items that have 20% or 30% off at this time of year, it's good for that, I suppose.
Well, I mean, Steve says I've stocked up on a few beers. I don't trust Squirrel and NDZ. Yeah, you might want to really to spend extra money on alcohol even. I don't know. I'm not sold on that idea. Annette says I got new tires for my car this week. Only a small discount, but I'm staying put today. Hey, that's your call. Mm. You want to do it? White Barry says Black Friday deals in South Africa at least run for the whole weekend, so there's no need to rush out. Okay.
Yeah, even a week or two.
Yonda says apparently it's Pick and Pay, although he called them something else, who has those Pampers at 110 Rand. So Lebang, run for them. That's where you're going to get them. All right. If I were a drinker, I would buy whiskey and beers. And then Snai says, yesterday I went to the shopping center near me and three catalogs from three different retailers were there. All their specials are exactly the same as what they gave during the year. Yeah, that's just false advertising. That's just, that's like you're trying to trap people. Michael says Black Friday, yeah. Black Friday in California means you can steal up to $950 worth of goods with only a misdemeanor charge, which is never prosecuted. They're having Black Friday every day of the week at the moment. Listen, that's a big story. San Francisco, there are a whole bunch of shops that are actually shutting down because they are being robbed every day and they can't even stay in business because more stuff is being stolen than is being sold. So they now have to shut down because they've completely abandoned the idea of law and order in places like San Francisco. You know, this is what happens when you vote for left-wing prosecutors and left-wing governments in places like that. But we're not going to talk too much politics. It is Friday. We've actually got here's Lebang. She just, I think you got disconnected there. I thought you were bored with us, Lebang. You suddenly went quiet and I thought, oh, she's okay. She's had enough.
I thought she'd put out a cardboard cutout of herself as soon as she heard the Pampers deal and left and went to the queue.
No, like literally, like you guys disappeared. So I'm like talking to myself here. I'm like, wait, my screen's frozen. What's going on? I was like, am I being load shed? Is this like the Black Friday from Eskom? What's happening? Yeah. But I'm here now.
Well, Tracy says that it's actually just a way to clear the shelves for new stock before Christmas. Okay, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
John Grisham wrote a book about people in prison for years for crimes they didn't commit. It's called The Guardians. Okay, I'm not going to read that stuff because it upsets me too much. I don't like those stories. I really don't. That's why I was kind of annoyed when you two wanted to hear that story, because I'm like, don't want to actually deal with it. It's horrible. Okay, we've got just a minute or two before we go to 7 o'clock, but I want to quickly read just the top of this from Mazan. She says, I know you couldn't be bothered to get yet another perspective from a South African living in New Zealand, but I just listened to the interview with a guy who moved to Auckland 10 years ago. He sounds really cool, but to be honest, that's a very PG version. If you ever need a real raw, feel-good reminder of how goddamned awesome our culture and people are, I'd love to give you a no-bullshit version of what living in New Zealand for a South African really feels like, and how awesome South Africa and the people really are when you've stepped away from it for a while. In a previous New Zealand discussion, I've never heard people mention how we get called names here. Yapis, old apartheid connotations, or any other mention of how racist the Kiwis really are. Tall poppy syndrome, where they don't grant others who do well and achieve things anything. You don't need a textbook for every skill set. Without a guide, the Kiwis are pretty damn useless. But let me also not discard some of the rough South Africans. Most SAFers in New Zealand live on the North Shore of Auckland, which is very similar to the Boerewors curtain in Cape Town. Over there, you wouldn't dare gossip in Afrikaans because Tani Susan will spring in and saampraat. There's a spur, they have regular sokkie jaws, I kid you not, and probably some of the best biltong I've ever tasted. Now, I did not know this, did you?
No, not at all.
We initially liked New Zealand, but now we feel it's a bit cunty because they've locked us up. Oh, Jacinda, sorry. We initially liked Jacinda, but now we feel she's a bit cunty because of locking us up for so long and screwing up our travel plans to visit our family in South Africa who've had it tough over the past 2 years. We don't mind her free cash money handouts, though, especially as a business owner. Oh, Gareth, I can go on and on, but I'll finish off by saying that your show, which obviously I feel personally part of every single day, is pure gold. It's the one constant that I brought with me from South Africa, and I want to thank you for getting up early every day, fighting the good fight on politics, cancel culture, and all that other stuff. So, okay, nice email from Mazan. Thank you, Mazan. It's nice to hear from you. Listen, I love hearing about people's experience in different places because there are loads of South Africans in other countries, and there are loads of other people from all over the world who come here. And to hear their varied conversations and points of view just gives you an idea of perspective on whether you've got it good or bad.
Yeah. Especially because people always like maybe joke or talk about leaving South Africa, like, oh no, there must be more for me. I'm going right, to Australia. Right, I can't take exactly. it here. And then you hear how shitty it is on the other side. Like, the grass maybe isn't greener, bro. Just keep planting seeds where you are.
Or you still have the same problems you had here. You know, like, let's say you've got a child who's a problem or a parent who's a problem, and they're not going to suddenly become better just because you've changed the geography of the place. So
exactly.
It's worth hearing these stories. Anyway, I mean, I'm not going to make anyone's decision for them, as I've said a number of times. It is 7 o'clock. We will be back in a moment or two with a whole lot more. We're going to speak to a really interesting guy called Marco Petrovsky.
Polo.
Leanne, it's Friday. I love this energy.
We've also got George Meany joining us and a whole lot more. CliffCentral.com. Friday morning. Good morning. CliffCentral.com.